This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 232, where AC and I look back at 2017 and all the news and the shows. Recorded live December 21st, 2017. A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com. AC!
CJ, what's up, buddy?
We're live.
We are live. This is a first self-hosted live show that we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. We have done live shows before. I'm just going to move around so you can see me a little bit here.
Oh, there's no washout now.
Yeah, exactly. No windows behind me. Yes, so we've obviously done live shows before from a couple of conferences, notably Ignite, that's just been. And we thought we'd try something new for the cloud show. You and I have been talking about this for a little while, actually, about doing more live shows and kind of thinking about building it up. But we'll get to this in a second to talk about a little bit more of the theory behind why we're going to do this. But this is definitely an alpha test. And so anybody who's watching or listening may notice some glitches and the inability for us to pull this off professionally. But
don't
bear with us.
Tires. They might fall off on this one.
Exactly. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. But yes, this is very much a test for live shows going forward, and would obviously love to get your thoughts and feelings on this sort of stuff. But anyway, more on the strategy in a moment. How are you, my friend?
I'm conflicted.
I know why.
I had a very roller coaster Saturday. I ran a half marathon on Saturday morning, and I beat my goal. I had a PR. It was a big goal that I had, to break a 2-hour half marathon, and I had been injured pretty good over the 2-3 weeks beforehand with a back injury. I'm not going to waffle on about this for a while, but I'll tell you, I don't remember the last time, or even if, that I've had that overwhelming personal sense of accomplishment that I've ever had. I love the sport. I love running. I love running half marathons because no one can do it for you. No one can help you. It takes a lot of dedication on training and everything, fueling correctly, planning it out, all that stuff. And then you have to be the only one that can execute with absolutely no help. And thankfully, we had perfect weather. My Saturday started out absolutely fantastic. So it was great. I'm pretty happy with what I did.
The force awakened in you for the marathon?
The force awakened in me. It was great. That part, yes, it was fantastic.
And then what happened, AC?
Yeah, so... And then I went and saw The Last Jedi. And
was it the last piece of happiness on that day?
Yeah. So for anybody who has not seen The Last Jedi, probably you want to tune out of the show for the next 10, 15 minutes or 10 minutes or so.
Because yeah, there might be some spoilers.
Yeah, epic spoilers. But man, I'll sum it up. We waited to do this show until today. We usually record on Tuesdays because you didn't get a chance to see it till last night.
Yeah,
I've got a little bit more time to digest it. I think that I'm curious if you run into the same thing where I have, where as the days have gone on, I've gotten more and more negative. But as an entertaining movie, it was great to sit down, watch a movie, put my feet up. I enjoyed that part of the movie. But as far as a Star Wars fan, as a hardcore Star Wars fan, I was supremely disappointed.
I'm still fresh off it, right? So I watched it last night. I threw some thoughts together and posted to some friends on Facebook about what I thought about it last night. But then having sort of thought about it last night while I was sleeping and this morning while I was thinking about it, I'd sort of summarize it pretty similarly. I did feel like it was a good standalone movie. Like if I went to that movie not really knowing that much about Star Wars, I would have been entertained for 2.5 hours. Amazing visual effects, not too overdone, like George Lucas level crappy visual effects in terms of dinosaurs walking around and in villages and things like that, you know, that they just destroyed some of the old movies with those new VFX.
Yeah.
But so good level of VFX, but also mixed in some of the old aspects of the movie. So they kept a bit of the feel of old movies and of the old movies in terms of, you know, some of the vector graphics and things like that. So I thought it was pretty true on that side of things, and very entertaining as a standalone movie. I came out having enjoyed it. Now, that said, as part of the overall saga, there are some definite letdowns and plot holes that I don't want to get into like iterating on every one, but if you're a hardcore fan, there is some kind of like, huh? Like, what? Where's that going kind of moments. And then finally, I just, you know, although I said it was an entertaining movie, there were some parts where I thought like, oh man, really? Do we have to dumb down the humor this much that it was just a little bit too Disney? It was like, next we'll be laughing at fart jokes in the movie, right? Like the can you hear me now moment was like, oh God, all right.
I hated that.
Guardians of the Galaxy level humor, but not in a funny Guardians of the Galaxy style movie, right? So I just thought it was a bit off.
We talked about this before we started recording, and I hadn't thought about this too much, so I may be a little off on this, but in the first seven movies, I can't think back to a single instance where I found humor or laugh out loud kind of a thing in Star Wars. That's not what this saga and story is all about. And look, I'm just going to preface this. I'm going to be a hardcore Star Wars geek right now, okay? Because I love this story. I love how long the story is. I enjoyed the first three movies. I didn't like the cinematography part too, because I thought it was a little, some stuff was corny, but I liked the story in general. The problem that I have so much with this one is that the story, to me, the storyline, this script feels sloppy. It feels quick and it feels sloppy. And I do want to pick out one or two things. I do agree with you on that humor side. We didn't need that part of it. The part when I was about ready to walk out of the theater, but that wasn't the case. So I was definitely going to sit through it. I was disgusted when I saw Luke just toss the lightsaber over his shoulder. I'm like, that was an epic part of how the last movie ended. And that's how you're going to sit there and just say, oh, I don't need this thing. It's like, just totally dismiss that character. That the fact that this movie completely, it was so transparent to me that this movie, it was about, let's take Star Wars and let's make this into a bridge movie for the next Disney series and the next Disney kind of sales thing. Let's get rid of Luke and let's really trivialize the Jedi. The fact that Leia, I get that she's a descendant of Anakin, and I get that she could have Force powers. We've not seen a single instance of her ever using these powers or training or learning or researching like all the other Jedi end up doing. Yet out of the blue, this woman can suddenly survive in space and then pull a Superman flying bag, not surprise anybody. And yet she can do all of that, but it's still super important to go find Luke. Why the f*** do we need to find Luke? She can do that. Why do we find this stuff? And I start getting off on a tangent.
Dude, don't start thinking about it too much, because that was my quibble.
Falling in gravity?
That's my quibble. Well, yeah, that is a Pandora's box of carnage if you talk about gravity in Star Wars. But anyway, yeah. But if you start thinking about the movie too much, it ruins it. Like, that's the problem I had with it. Like, yeah, there were too many loose ends and not enough depth. And the other thing I thought was a bit weird is they started the movie by escaping a planet and they ended up escaping a planet. And it's like, well, okay, so you basically went nowhere.
Not only that, so you hit the nail on the head. The more you think about it, the more the movie starts to kind of fall apart, which to me, in every other Star Wars movie, it's been the exact opposite. The more you think about it, like the thing I loved about Force Awakens, you walked out of Force Awakens and then you start having conversations. And for the next week, all I can think of is, where can I go read up on this? Where can I read up on this? Who is Snoke? Where did he come from? And all this done. Let me fill this part of the story. I don't feel like there was anything that needs to be filled from this. In fact, what did they do? Oh, hey, look, we're just going to go through and completely trivialize Luke and just make him be a stall tactic so the rest of the guys can leave. This guy's been around forever. He's been...
Yeah. I did find that really strange that they decided to pseudo kill him off, right? I thought it was a lame exit in and of itself. Like, they were like, oh, how are we going to get rid of Luke? Because he doesn't want to do any more of these movies. I don't know. We'll just make him disappear. It's like, all right, cool. What about Leia? Like, there's a gaping wound on the storyline. Like, how are they going to do that next movie? Anyway.
Can't wait to see how they renegotiate her contract for 9.
Yeah. She may have, hopefully she signed ahead. They're just going to CGI her or something. I don't know. It's a big question mark. The things I did like about it, though, are that it was pretty true to the originals in terms of like how the movie was made and how it looked and felt. And like in terms of it had a little bit of that sort of old cheesiness to the movie, like some of the characters in the casino where they were obviously like not CGI and like models and stuff like that. Like, I thought that was kind of cool. I really liked although it was, in terms of a plot line or a thing that happened in the movie, was kind of like, oh, that was a bad choice. I think the whole jump to light speed scene was actually very well done, whether or not like you can argue and quibble about like, why doesn't everybody just fly these things into each other and like pilot the things with droids? I thought it was done very well. So yeah, there was that. I liked the ice planet scene with the salt stuff, the red thing. Like the cinematography was great in that scene, I thought. And it kind of reminded me of Hoth, like the battle on Hoth. And so I thought that was really cool. I think there's a lot I liked about it, but it's just, there's a couple of distracting points that I get stuck on. Anyway.
Yeah, that's me. Eh? There were some characters, you're killing off Snoke. We just learned about Snoke. This guy.
That was a poor choice.
I can't believe you kill him. And then,
I don't think we actually ever should have seen Snoke in this movie. I think he should have been the big hologram.
Yeah.
Again, for the entire movie.
Yeah, let's keep some mystery about this guy. And then you kill off Captain Phasma. She was a badass.
She had the potential to be a really kick-ass character, right? But they haven't developed her enough, and now they seem to have gotten rid of her.
Yeah, and then how did she get killed? By a janitor.
Yeah.
Finn. I can't stand that character. I like Jar Jar Binks more than I like Finn.
Oh, dude, I can't go that far.
Yeah, well, we don't...
Jar Jar Binks must die, like... Anyway, I didn't like the puffins until the Chewie scene.
You know, I didn't get that side too. You mean the Chewie scene when he was going to eat one, or the one where they were flying with him?
I think he should have eaten it. That's what I would have done. I would have been like, he would have looked at him, would have seen the puffin, like, please don't eat me, please don't eat me, or whatever. And then he should have just been like, yum, puffin.
Well, apparently the puffin didn't mind that he had already killed one of his other fellow puffins, but he just was like, don't eat him. I'm like... Yeah. Isn't it the whole, I don't hunt, but isn't the whole thing about hunting? You kill what you eat what you kill. So he just killed it for sport. That's kind of a move.
Yeah. Anyway. So overall, entertaining, but two thumbs down from you. I'd give it at least 1.5 thumbs down. Like,
so
I was moderately entertained, I've got to say. I enjoyed watching it and I came away like thinking that was an entertaining movie, but there are just too many distractions to make it a solid thumbs up.
Yeah, maybe two thumbs down is harsh, but to me, I can't get past the whole, this saga has been going on for 40-ish years, and yet this movie just kind of diminishes all of that, and it really pisses me off. I don't know. Thank goodness J.J. Adams is directing and writing the next one, so episode 9, so as a friend of mine said, J.J. Adams, you're our only hope.
J.J. Adams does have a habit of not opening boxes, and I think the movie needed a few of those. Hey, we've actually got a live comment come in as we're recording this from Michael Greth, who says, my fun fact, Luke's home on the island looks like the Flintstones recreated Bilbo Baggins' Hobbit hole. Very true. That's actually a real place.
Ireland, I think. I heard.
Yes, I think so. And yeah, it was pretty impressive, though. I saw some photos of the island on the internet the other day. And pretty cool stuff. But yes, it does look like the equivalent of Skywalker Hobbit Hole. Yeah. Nice.
Okay.
Anyway. Well, all right, I see. Well, is that enough bitching about Star Wars?
Considering it's the first time that our listeners are hearing me bitch about it, I could definitely go on. But I've been doing this Thursday now, and it's been a couple days for me. I need to move on. I'll tell you about something else that's kind of cool, man. Hey, I got a bunch of my SmartThings stuff that I got to install on Sunday, and having some fun with this home automation stuff.
It's pretty cool, isn't it? Dude, once you pop, you can't stop, though, man. Watch out for this. It is a time and a money suck, but it's super fun.
Yeah, I got a MX gift card. I went ahead and blew my MX gift card really quick on this stuff. So it wasn't, quote, my money. But yeah, we did.
How you're rationalizing that. That's exactly how I'd do it too.
Yeah. Well,
it made me think I have an MX gift card sitting around at home as well. I may have to do some of the last minute shopping.
Really good deals, no. I did the Ring doorbell. I know you got one of those. That thing's been really cool. And then a couple switches, a switch, a dimmer. You know, the one part I'm disappointed in is the Philips Hue bulbs.
Yeah, you were playing around with those, huh?
Yeah, I got one of the starter packs, and I wanted to use it to communicate to the rest of my family when I was recording in my office or when I was on a conference call, which would come in really handy considering my kids are going to be out of school starting this afternoon for a few weeks. And there's no easy way that I found so far that's just like, click this button and it'll start never ending loop that is just kind of pulse like a red light. And I want that right outside my office. And
a recording now light, right?
Yeah.
Like you see outside like a recording studio or whatever.
Yeah, and I want to have I want to use different colors. I want to be able to say, like, you know, hey, I'm on a conference call, so don't be crazy, or I'm busy, please don't interrupt me, or hey, I'm recording, hey, kids, quiet, no friends can come over right now. And I'm finding that hard to do. I mean, great, they've got an API you can do stuff with, but man, I don't want to write a bunch of code for this stuff. Someone's like, oh, well, this app does this and this app does this. I'm like, man, you know, it's kind of nice that the Philips Hue kind of ecosystem, there's all these apps that you can tie into, but they're almost all of them are like $1 to $5 and you got to install it to try and see, does this do what I want to do? Does this what do I want to do? I'm just, you know, this is irritating.
Hey, Jason mentioned in the comments that IFTTT may have the ability to help automate that.
I've already looked at that. And IFT doesn't let me do a loop. At least I can't figure out to let me do a loop. It doesn't let me, I can do push button, but it doesn't let me change the color and the specific bulb. And then to say, just do this for a certain amount of time. It's just like, gotcha. Hey, set this mode. I tried that. I looked at Zapier and I looked at Flow first, but of course Flow couldn't do it. But I tried a couple different things. I couldn't find it. So right now I'm still kind of up in the air. I know that there's a thing that you can put as a widget on your phone from the Hue app to change the mode, but it always goes back to the same color the last time they were used, which is white in most cases. And I want to change it to red or whatever. So it's just, I can use it. They're great, but I need to do a little bit more here. So it's a bit of a, I don't know, I'm a little irritated by it, but whatever.
Gotcha. Well, keep us posted if you find a solution to it. Hey, now I also heard you got a Ring doorbell. I recently put one of those in as well.
Yeah, that thing's pretty cool.
Yeah, I haven't done anything with smart things and the Ring doorbell yet. Apparently, you can hook them up to do stuff, but I haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, I think that I would like to have it to where you put the bulb like at the porch light. Could be turned on when someone rings the doorbell or something, like if it's nighttime. But yeah, I'm not doing anything with that. I guess I'm doing stuff to turn on the coffee pot, turn on the lights in the kitchen, turn on the Christmas tree, turn on the Christmas lights outside in the garage and the lights on the outside of the garage.
Yeah.
But it's the one thing that Meredith and I did notice that as my wife and I were talking, it's like, you know, I saw the value in this, but I kind of also saw like, you know, what's the real purpose of all this home automation stuff? And I have two little things here. But like you said, once you kind of dip your toe into it, you're like, there's nothing epic about it, but there's a lot. I could see so many different places where this would be really nice to employ.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is that a lot of people poo-poo it as like, I don't need that, right? And sure, pretty much the only things you really need are some food and water and a bit of shelter. But once you start, there are things that I find really helpful and useful about it. And much like, you know, we found pencils useful. And
coffee
and stuff like that, right? Technically, you don't need any of this stuff, but I've definitely found it very helpful. Like I love being able to, when we're up skiing with the kids and we're coming home, we say, hey, we're coming home and it turns on my coffee machine and gets it all warmed up, sets the temperature of the house, makes sure it's warm when we get back home, does lights and bits and pieces and all that sort of stuff. And it is useful. I find it useful anyway. When I turn on the TV, it turns off the light above the TV and sets the scene and does all that sort of stuff. So technically you could jump up and do all that yourself, but I find it kind of useful. And let's be frank, it's kind of geeky and cool and fun to do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it definitely is fun. I'm enjoying it. So here's a practical example of it. I think I told you this last time. I outed myself where I found last year we went on a 1 week vacation. We came back from the vacation. The coffee pot was still on with like no water in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have it set up that when my phone, my wife's phone and my son's phone, when they all leave the house, it has like a timer of I think like 60 or 75 minutes. And there's a reason why I've got it that long, but it's got a timer going for a certain amount of time. And once that expires, if nobody comes home during that time, it shuts off the Christmas tree, it shuts off the lights in the kitchen, and it shuts off the coffee pot. If they're not already on, it shuts them off. If they're on, it shuts them off. If they're not already on, it doesn't like toggle it.
Sure.
So
yeah, no, exactly.
That's a real world application for it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Nice. Well, I'm glad you're dipping your toes in this automation business because I really have enjoyed it a lot, tinkering around and just adding little bits and pieces here and there. And now the wife acceptance factor is high. And so now when Vicky's thinking about something about around the house, she'll be like, oh, we could stick that on smart things and have that happen automatically or whatever. Kind of cool.
Yeah, just by purchase.
Yes, exactly. So yes, let me know. Keep us posted on new things that you add to the house.
I will do. Hey, there's one thing we should talk about really quick here for some people that are actually picking up on this because they're actually watching it. But hey, we're doing something new today and we didn't tell anybody that we were doing this ahead of time because we didn't know how it was going to work. And it's kind of hard to do. It's hard and hard to do a test run.
Yeah, exactly.
So what we're thinking about doing is maybe once a month or once in a while, or when we do an interview, maybe we're going to start doing these shows as live shows where we publish this straight to either Facebook Live or to YouTube Live, our channel, where I guess channel or page on either one of those two. Mm-hmm. So people can kind of tune in on it. Now, these are still going to be real episodes. Like, this is episode 232. We're going to take the recording for this. We're going to package it up. We're going to send it to our producer, and it'll get shipped out next Tuesday, whatever it is.
26th.
26th, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll still ship this out at a normal time. But what we're doing is CJ and I are recording this with Zoom. We're broadcasting. Hey, we may even be able to have, you know, real interaction coming from people that are watching the show and get, like, you know, live questions and stuff like that. We'd love to check it out, but it's just going to take a little bit of time for us to be able to see how it works out. So let us know what you think about it. But yeah, you don't have to tune into these. You're not going to be missing any content. We're not going to do any exclusive live shows with this, but got some plans for 2018.
Yeah, exactly. And we might spice up those shows where we plan live shows ahead with things like taking questions from the audience in real time, setting some time aside for those kinds of things. But definitely this is a bit of a test run, and we'll see how it goes. Of course, we didn't tell anybody, but we'll try and publish ahead of time so that, well, we might try to do them at different times of the day as well to try and get a bit more spread around the world if it doesn't work for certain time zones. So, but yeah, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, let us know what you think. If you'd like to participate, if you think the live show is good, bad, ugly, all that sort of stuff, and we'll take it from there. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 5 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Okay, AC, it's time to move on. This episode is about looking back at 2017, about the show and about cloud news and some of the good and some of the bad from the year past.
Is this moving on like going from episode 8 to episode 9? Star Wars?
Too soon.
Sorry.
It's going to take me more than 12 hours to move on.
Go ahead. I apologize.
Nice. Yes. So it's been a big year for us, actually. I think we've done a lot, and we've been pretty consistent about publishing shows every week, some better than others, obviously. We've had some good shows, we've had some bad shows. We've also had some really good shows, and we'll talk about a few of our highlights from the year and things like that. But sort of in summary, how do you feel about this, about our year gone by?
I like it. I like what we've done. I mean, we've published 232. We started the year, our first episode this year was 174. We had some really great interviews that we did. I really like our covers that we did at Ignite and got some really good traction from that. Heck, my Azure bill for data storage going out, as we've talked about, apparently we did a really good job at Ignite. And yeah, we can also thank our sponsors right now too.
Yes. Yeah, we're talking terabytes and terabytes and terabytes of outbound data. So it's, people are downloading, which is great. We could share some numbers, right? I think at the beginning of the year, we were averaging roughly 3,000 listeners a show, something like that.
I think it's close to like 2,700, 2,800.
Maybe 2,700, 2,800. And now we're bouncing along the 4,000 mark, yep, which is really great, right? Yeah. It's
That number, just so people understand, that number is, that's an advertising number. So that's the number that that you use for the number of unique downloads for an episode in the 6 weeks after that episode has been published.
Yes, exactly. Yep. So that number is really important to us in terms of growing our listenership. And it's also, it just makes us feel good about continuing doing the show if we know people are getting value from it and are downloading it and listening to it, right? So we're really proud about that. I think that's been really good. You know, that said, we've kind of continued our recipe, right? We haven't really shaken up our recipe at all. So that's something I would like to do moving forward as well. And doing some additional marketing around the show and helping spread the word and things like that. But I think it's fair to say we really appreciate everybody that's tweeted about us, that sent out tweets about our sponsors, for example, things like that. That's really, really helped.
Yeah, I'll chime in. I guess another thing too that I look back, I really like that we've done this year is we've got some great sponsors. We did lose our first sponsor, Valid, which, I mean, they decided to kind of hold off until revisit it maybe in 2018. But we've got some absolutely fantastic sponsors that are behind this show with Nintex and AvPoint and ShareGate and Zscaler and a bunch of other ones that have been there too in the past. The other thing too that I'm looking forward to in 2018 is, you know, we haven't really shared this with anybody yet, but we've been invited to come cover different conferences. But for the first time next year, we've been invited to be the keynote at a conference or one of two keynotes at a conference. And so not just as an invitation, but we are also going to be one of the sponsors for this goes by two different names, but it's Mark Rackley's show in the Ozarks. It's the North American Collaboration Summit / SharePoint Alooza at the very beginning of March.
Yeah, that's not the URL.
No.
The / SharePoint Alooza. So the URL is actually, for the conference, is collabsummit.org. Collabsummit.org. And Mark Rackley puts this on in Branson. It is running from the end of February, beginning of March, in Branson, Missouri. So shout out to Mark. He puts so much effort into this show. He puts a lot of time and effort into putting this thing on. Every year he says, don't let me do this again. And then he does it again. And we all roll our eyes. But in fairness, it takes a lot of work to put something like this on, and full credit to him. So if you are interested in going to a show, the lineup of speakers is incredible, really, for that conference. Given its location, it's quite hard to get to for people from around the world and around the country. But he pulls together a great crowd, and it's a really fun conference. So definitely check that out, collabsummit.org.
Yeah, and we'll be the keynote presenter as a live show. Again, we have to come up with a theme, but we will do it with the keynote presenter for the Microsoft Cloud Show as day two of the conference. So we're looking forward to that. And hey, it'd be great if we could do the same thing like at the North American SharePoint Conference in May in Vegas.
That's right. If any of the team organizing it are listening to this, get in touch with us. We'd love to help.
Hey, the Linux Foundation keeps asking us to come to their shows. I mean, SharePoint Conference, I mean, we kind of cover that, right?
Exactly. Ish. We talked about OneDrive a couple of episodes ago. And I think for the first time in the history of our show, we didn't completely bag it. So that's progress, right?
We did. Yeah. They took notice of it too on Twitter.
I know. That's very, yeah. Aaron, if you're listening. See? Exactly. Yeah.
I've done a good job. Definitely got a good job with it.
Hey, so back to our 2017 thoughts. What do you think some of our highlights were for the show for you over the last 12 months?
I'm going to first start with the guests that we have. There's one episode and there's a bunch of guests. So episode 200 that we did, that was a big milestone for us. And I got a lot out of the fact that we were able to get some really good quotes from some people that submitted some stuff to see some that came true from the heart on how the show is helping them. But the other thing that being able to give an Xbox away to the local children's hospital, I would love to be able to do that more often next year. So as far as guests go, man, that's the other big thing for me. And that's, I'm going to rattle off of everybody that we had as a guest last year. We started the year with Laura Rogers talking about Power Apps and Flow. But Rima Nahi from Microsoft talking about Cosmos DB in episode 199. Paul Stubbs from Microsoft talking about Bot Framework, episodes 203 and 207. Richard Zerga, Microsoft again. Actually, let me just talk about all Microsoft people first, because we got a bunch of Microsoft people here. Richard DeZerga talking about the Teams and Teams development in episode 185. Donovan Brown talking about VSTS in episode 220. Matt Bremer talking about the business of the cloud in 223. Dan Kogan and Vesa Juvenen talking about SharePoint Framework in 218. Donna Malieri talking about Azure Functions in 217. Yina Arenas talking about Microsoft Graph in 213. Omar Shane and Adam Harmitz talking about Office 365 and OneDrive in 222. Those are all of our Microsoft people that joined us. We had Ben Nyland from ShareGate talk about the digital transformation in episode 181. Ben Keeps, you got to interview Ben. That was a great episode in episode 197.
Yep. That was at the Build conference, I think. Yeah. That was, we've done a lot of interviews.
Yeah, we did. I think that's all of them. I think I might've missed some, but yeah, it's a news and some interviews, but it's mostly a news show. When you go back and you look at that list, that's a pretty badass list, man.
Yeah, it's great. We've got some fantastic guests and we're obviously really appreciative of those folks coming on the show and talking about what they're passionate about. There's some absolute standout performers in that list that are always fascinating to talk to and just really nice people, really humble people. They focus on what they're working on. They're really deep on it and really know their stuff. And it's always a pleasure talking to them. So those were excellent, excellent interviews, a lot of those.
So let me ask you then, let me flip this question around on you. What was some of your like big picture takeaways? We're going to do a bit of a bit of what's your favorite, what's your the best stuff, the worst stuff from the year, but what's some of the stuff that, you know, that when you look back at 2017 from the show, what was your take?
Yeah, I think you covered the guests, so I won't go into any more detail on that. That was a definite highlight. I think we landed more great interviews with more interesting people this year than we ever have in the previous 3 and a bit years or whatever we've been going for now. So that was definitely a big highlight. I think a highlight for me was bringing sponsors onto the show. And I mean that in a way that it means that we have more flexibility to produce more shows that are of a higher quality and do more with the show. And we really appreciate having them. And I think that's been a big change this year, is we've kind of got a bit more serious about that. And that was kind of a highlight for me, I think, is that flexibility and that support has really helped. I think the special episodes, so the live show we did at Ignite, I really enjoyed. It was much better this year than the previous year because of the way it was published and supported by Microsoft a little more as well. I really enjoyed doing that show. It's fun to get together at Ignite at a place like that and do those sort of special episodes, which was really cool. And then the conferences that we've gone to. So we've gone to Build, we've gone to Ignite, we've gone to the Microsoft ones, obviously, but also third-party conferences. So like SP Fest and a couple of others. And those are good opportunities to get together with people outside of the Microsoft employee realm, I guess, and from people all over the world that go to those. So the interviews and things that have happened there have been a real standout for me as well. But yeah, overall, I just think that we've been very consistent and solid, and that's been a real takeaway for me for this year, really sort of in the flow, so to speak.
In the flow, yeah.
Okay, so there's a couple of my highlights, AC. Thinking about the good, the bad, and the ugly from the year past, what are some of the things that you felt in the tech world that we've covered, whether it be Microsoft or Google or Amazon or VMware or what have you? What are some of the highlights that you've, on the tech side of things, that you've really taken notice of this year?
I'm going to be careful here because I'm looking at our list that we have, and I can see that a lot of my highlights and a lot of my lowlights are shared with you as well. So I'm going to let you do lowlights first, but I'll throw some of my best that are in there. I already talked about episode 200. That was a big thing for me, but I think that there were three big things that really got me for the best stuff. One is around SharePoint Framework. So we got a development model that was released GA at the beginning of 2017. And I believe that was I think that we have finally settled on a dev model. It might be too early to say this because Microsoft has to actually do this, but I feel like we might have actually settled on a dev model that we're going to have for a while. I like the approach of doing client-side dev, and I think they've done a really good job of not only shipping it, but also working to the communication has gotten better about, you know, when there's an issue, how they're resolving it, when to expect resolution, and the dedication of pushing features out to it. And then I think the other big thing to me that really stands out from this past year, there's lots of little features that we have from Office 365, like Teams comes out and Communication Sites comes out. We have other things that are coming out as well around a hub portal or an admin portal redo, hub sites as well. But I think from a cloud perspective, the thing that really stands out to me over the past year is shocker, just going back, talking a little bit about containers, and it's the how much Kubernetes has really taken off to be the leader in the orchestrators piece. I mean, so much so that we've seen now Microsoft from Azure, we've seen AWS, they've all released now their managed Kubernetes offerings. And at the same time, we've seen companies like Docker de-emphasize their orchestrator options and say, you know what, this isn't what we're going to be able to provide value, and we're not going to be able to beat Kubernetes. So let's just join them and let's focus on what we can really put the benefit to. And I think that it really shows the maturity of the container ecosystem, the maturity of the container space, which is really big for cloud-based deployments and having that elasticity of scale. I mean, containers can definitely go on-prem, but they really do apply well in a cloud-based infrastructure. So that's some of my best stuff that I would say.
Yep, that's definitely fair. So some good stuff for the year. I think we've driven people nuts with the amount of time that we've spoken about containers because we're super passionate about it. And I think it's really, really changing things. So I guess that's a little bad, but the good side is there's been tons of stuff that's happened, like you've said, right? The rise of Kubernetes, the openness of Azure to adopt open source and these tools from outside of the Microsoft ecosystem, traditional Microsoft ecosystem, means that now the Microsoft ecosystem has changed, right? What I would call a Microsoft tool now is not defined the same way as I would have, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And this year has been huge for Azure in that regard, right? With container instances, Azure Container Service, a lot of the work they're doing around with, you know, Node and things like that in Azure and support for other languages and things like that is just, it's just phenomenal. The work they've done around hosting like Linux workloads in Azure and the opportunities that's opened them up for in terms of running other types of products and services in Azure is really, really cool. And it's not new this year, but they've really sort of doubled down on it this year, I think. They've hired some amazing people. Like, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So like Brendan Burns, for example, in the container space. Holy smoke. That's insanity.
Huge coup.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just the people at the top. They've been filling out their evangelist-type roles that are out there in the community working with people, with people that are really known for this stuff. And they've gone and hired talent as opposed to try and grow it internally. That's really lending a lot of kudos to them. The flip side of that is I still don't think Azure is taken seriously in the startup world. And that may be okay. That may be like AWS sort of is the leader there. And that might be okay. Azure is cleaning up in the enterprise. And startups may have to figure that out eventually. But Azure is definitely winning in the enterprise, no doubt about it. Yeah. So that's pretty good. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as a leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
Those are definitely very good like highlights, I think, we've had of the last year that we both shared here. But I mean, let's put on our Star Wars Episode 8 hat and let's go negative.
Right? Okay. And,
sorry, I can't. What would you say would be what's your bad or what's your ugly?
Yeah.
What's the stuff that you thought was like the black moments on the space that we cover?
Probably the highlight in that space for me was SharePoint framework. By any stretch, it's not all bad. It's fantastic for enterprise devs and people who want to build you know, extensions and things to SharePoint, and it's getting more featureful and more robust and things like that. But for enterprise developers, if you've heard me rant about this before, it should come as no surprise. I sound like a broken record, and I'm sure the team are bored of me, but I work at an ISV, and I run an ISV, and I would love to be building more with SPFX, but I just don't feel it's ready for ISVs yet. That comes in two flavors. That comes in the features that it offers, I think, are getting there, but we're not quite there. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see a few more things added for that, just to make it a bit more of an option. And then there's some fundamentals that they need to get right, packaging and distribution and security being the top three. Mm-hmm. And I've banged on about that since it came out. And I know that they're listening. It's just I'm a bit bored of waiting.
It's like me and my Amazon packages right now. I'm bored of waiting.
Yeah, fair enough. But that said, if I was an enterprise developer or somebody building internal enterprise tools, I would be all over it, you know, without a shadow of a doubt. And I'd be buying your course and learning how to do it.
Yeah.
Because I do think it's a viable option for enterprise devs now.
That's fair about all the packaging and the distribution stuff. I mean, there's definitely no store model there. And they did do something that was pretty epic in the last week or two, where they now have the ability to, when I deploy something, it can be one packet. I can sell it as an ISV. I can sell this product to a customer. And when they go to deploy it, everything stays within their environment. But it's a manual download this and then run this script to install it. There's no one kind of install thing. I think that's what you're looking for.
Yes, that's full trust solutions again. And as an ISV, that comes with some baggage. That's not really taking advantage of some cloudy benefits in terms of maintenance of that application and updating of that application and things like that. And hey, that's fine, right? Like, download the solution and run a script and install it. That might be fine for some folks. But running a SaaS platform, one of the benefits is being able to make updates incrementally and frequently and fix things and add things and do all that sort of stuff. And that model doesn't really fit particularly well for that. But hey, I guess it depends on what you're looking for.
Actually, now that you say that, I wonder if the new ALM APIs that we have that finally allow us to deploy stuff to the app catalogs and do upgrades and stuff, I wonder if I would go, if I could go to Hyperfish and I could purchase something from you guys, and the install process is, okay, click this. And then you walk through, I grant the Hyperfish AD app access to my tenant, and then it can go in and it can install an app to the app catalog. And if there's an update, you've got a record that, hey, there's an update that needs to be applied. You can push it. You don't own the code. You don't host the code, but you host the service that knows how to actually automate the installation process. And
yeah,
I wonder if that actually works. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I know the APIs allow me to do that, but I wonder if they allow me to do that as an external-based system to do that kind of a push. So
yeah, not sure. I haven't looked at those yet. That sounds great. Like, if you could do it not as a tenant administrator, I think that's probably a bit more viable. Like, if they created a new security scope or something, like an application provider scope or something like that, and let me push updates to the app and stuff like that, that'd be pretty sweet.
I mean, you could do that today with the new site collection scoped app catalogs. But anyway, I think now we're getting into the weeds here, but now you give me some ideas.
Yeah, we have to play around with that. So yeah, I think that was, I was hoping for a little more ISV focus on SPFX. I think it's a bit of slow progress there. But that said, I know that Vesa I know that Vesa's listening. I don't know about anybody else on the team, but hopefully that's enough. And at least he's the vocal one about it. So that's great.
Yeah, he's a good advocate for the community. And I do think the rest of them are listening. They're doing pretty good there.
Yeah, how about you? So what are one of the things that you feel were kind of the worsts of the year?
I have two big elements. One of them that just happened, and that's the whole FCC net neutrality thing that went on. It remains to be seen if this is really going to have the negative input that the people like you and me are saying that it's going to have. We're all just saying, here's what's going to happen. Maybe it doesn't happen, and maybe we're wrong.
Maybe it doesn't.
That would be great, right? But I don't know. I don't trust them.
I think corporations, when there is money on the table to be made, will generally head in that direction as a general rule, right? So, and it might take a little while, but I suspect they will act in their own best interests.
We had a good discussion with somebody about this on Facebook. And so my thought on this whole thing that I can sum up is that it was disappointing, the action that they took, but I'm a free market person. I'm a capitalist at heart. I'm a free market person at heart. I think that let the markets go through and regulate themselves. I don't think that government should get involved. until the market is no longer a free market. In this case specifically, like for me personally, I only have two options for my internet as far as like a wired provider coming in. It's either Comcast or a Comcast derivative like Xfinity, or it's AT&T. And if AT&T does something with my internet connection, my only option is to go to Comcast. And if Comcast does something, then that's not much choice. And the barrier to entry to be able for a new provider to come in
is very high,
is incredibly high. And the infrastructure costs are there. So it's one thing when the market shows that it can't be a free market, then I think that it's fair to have some sort of oversight, like the whole banking thing and letting them run wild. I mean, that is so much more of a, you know, money grab kind of a thing and coming up with products that are hard to follow. Anyway, so FCC, that was a big negative for me. The other big negative for me is, you know, these clouds are supposed to be redundant or fault tolerant. And that's one of the things I'm supposed to not have to deal with. But on February the 8th, February
outages,
the 28th,
baby.
But it's not just outages. When it's like an epic, like, really, guys? How did you screw this? I mean, Amazon on February the 28th of this year, S3 and their East US data center completely melted down. Internet was on fire, and so many CDNs were hosted there, including the status page for AWS. They couldn't even update. It was like the classic meme where that little dog looking thing is sitting there at a coffee table, at a table with a cup of coffee with the fires all around and goes, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Like going, the internet's on fire, yo.
Yeah.
And
or it was like the status page, they have like the red, green and amber icons. I'm pretty sure I saw some meme about the icons being hosted on S3 and nobody thought about that.
Yeah. Your status page should not be part of your own infrastructure. In fact, Amazon status page should be in GCP or Azure. Azure status page should be in AWS or GCP. And GCP should be in AWS or Azure.
I mean, they should come to an agreement together to load balance their status page between themselves on everybody else's clouds. Good call.
Yeah, that was a disappointment for me because, I mean, it's one of those things like when you see a certificate expire, you know, Azure's done that one or two times. When you just see one of those big meltdown moments, you're like, I thought that we were supposed to be away from that.
Yeah. So. Hey, earlier this week, Project Oxford.ai, its SSL certificate expired. And admittedly, people should have moved off that onto the GA cognitive services endpoint. But, you know, come on, like, how is it possible these things still happen? I say that, but then I'm kind of jinxing myself because now I'm trying to remember when our certificates expire.
Hey, earlier this week, we had a problem with the podcast where the site wouldn't let us write anything to the database to publish the episode on Tuesday. And, I forgot to tell you this. Uh-oh. So we found out that we had a database issue. We had an error in the database.
Yeah.
And I found the problem and I went to go, the solution was I just need to go delete this one record and everything should be okay. I went back to go run a backup of the database and I realized that I haven't run a backup of our database for Orchard since 2016.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then I told you, I think I can fix it, but I'm running a backup right now. Let me let the backup finish. I went back to my little SQL editor, accidentally hit the play button. I deleted the record before the database backup was finished. So I had a little, oh my God, I hope that actually fixed it.
I think we need to scrub up our DevOps. Yeah.
We are. We're going to get off the platform we're on.
Nice. Yes, we are. That's something to look forward to this year. Hey, so those are a couple of bad things. Why don't we finish on a good note? Like, what was something else you found that was exciting about this year or that you were happy about? Like, anything else you want to sort of highlight? Any new 365 stuff or anything else in Microsoft products you felt was really good?
There were two or three things that Azure did that I thought were really impressive. I thought that the concept of the Event Grid service, where basically you have this one hub in the middle of Azure that everything can publish to, and it could be like the main service bus for all Azure services. I think the concept behind that is absolutely epic. And then I think that this new service that Azure introduced and AWS quickly came up and released their own, whether Azure got word that it was going to be released from AWS, whatever, Azure beat them to market. The concept of container instances to where I could just say, I want to host a container, but I don't want to deal with all the infrastructure. I just want to pay with the use and true containers as a service.
Yeah.
I thought that's awesome. I think AWS's product that they announced is called Fargate.
Yes, Fargate. That's right. Yeah, that was kind of really cool to see. And it was nice to see Azure go first. And we've spoken about having containers as a service for a while on the show. And it was kind of nice to see some movement in that space. I agree.
How about you? Was there anything epic that you...
Yeah, one last sort of thing that I would touch on is really good news for the year. The Microsoft Graph taking off. Like, it has just gone nuts. And it is in no short order due to that team's execution. They're doing a great job with the graph. It's a monumental effort behind the scenes to pull something like this together across the company from different teams and groups and things like that. But Microsoft are nailing it. Usage is taking off. There's, I can't remember the number now. They said there's X many number of new applications calling the graph every month. I can't remember what it was now. But anyway, it was pretty decent. And it hasn't slowed. I think that's what excites me the most about it is often these things will take off and then sort of plateau. But the momentum seems to have continued, at least from where I'm sitting. Mm-hmm. And that's been really nice to see. Of course, I'd love to be having it moving faster and adding more stuff quicker and all the things that I need would be really great. But it's really nice to see that the momentum continuing around the graph. And that goes to things like Teams. Like there are new Teams APIs on the graph in beta right now, for example. So obviously Teams was launched earlier this year, I guess. And that seems to be doing really well as well. The launch went off really well. I think they nailed the launch apart from external sharing. But hey, you should never expect external sharing to work. Just put it that way. And then
from Redmond.
From Redmond, correct. But then the execution of the launch was great. Got apps on all the platforms. It worked pretty well. It's pretty straightforward to use for the basic scenarios. They've been nailing that. There's been a few missteps around external sharing, that's for sure. But yes, so I think highlights in 365, Microsoft Graph and Teams, I think, have been pretty decent highlights from this past year, yet that I would finish on.
Awesome.
Yeah, been a big year. CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories, such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
What do you say we finish the year with some picks?
No show would be complete without picks, AC. That's for sure.
I agree. You want to go first? Do you want me?
Sure. I'm happy to go first.
Go ahead.
This one is kind of a shout out to our space aficionado listeners. Elon tweeted yesterday, I think it was, we'll link to it in the show notes, the first shots of Falcon Heavy being assembled at the Cape. And I knew what this thing was going to look like, but I'm really going to try and keep my language clean. OMG, this thing looks amazing.
It's real. That's the thing. The picture, it makes it real.
It's so cool. It just looks so cool. And so many engines.
I love that view from the bottom of the 27 Merlins pointing at you.
That is a very hot rear end. Literally. That is a hot rear end. Look at that thing. It's crazy.
I can't wait for, it's going to fly in January, man. And I am so glad I have not a single day of travel scheduled for January because I am on deck to drive down there and see it.
Max thrust at liftoff is 5.1 million pounds.
40% more than the Saturn V moonshot. That's really what he said. He followed that up on Twitter. Like it was like something, it's...
No. He said 50% higher thrust with five F1 engines at 7.5 million pounds.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So it's half the thrust of the Saturn V.
It was 50% higher thrust.
His wording is kind of weird, but I think the way I read it, he says, this is a literal quote, it was 50% higher thrust with five F1 engines at 7.5 million pounds. I love that rocket so much. I think he's saying that Saturn V was 50% more thrust.
Yeah.
And that the engineering involved in that is obviously significant. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're getting there. They're getting towards Saturn V territory, which is a huge milestone.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, looking forward to seeing that puppy take off. Like, that is going to be phenomenal.
Two of these guys
photos are just crazy.
The two side boosters are going to fly back to the Cape and the center booster is going to land on the ship.
Yeah, you know, the Saturn V might have had more thrust, but... most of it dropped in the ocean.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my first pick. The second pick is a new thing that I have for my car called, I think I'm pronouncing it right, Pitaka. P-I-T-A-K-A. They make really cool looking iPhone cases and that have magnets built into the case for their mag mounts for your car. So I got a case for my iPhone from them with the magnets built in. And I also got a Qi wireless charging mag mount for the car as well. Mm. So their mounts, you know, they clip into the air vents or what have you, and then you stick your phone to them. So previously in the past, I'd stick my phone to it and it would be mag mounted and that was it. Now when I stick my phone to the mag mount, it starts charging.
Mm. This is pretty cool.
So I don't have to plug stuff in, which Vicky was like, wow, gee, you're really saving yourself 5 seconds a day. And
atta girl, Vicky.
Yeah. And, you know, there's some fairness to that. Like, yeah, it didn't take a long time to plug stuff in and pull stuff out, but I think you'll appreciate less cable management. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha.
It's nice being able to just have cables in one spot, you know, route them all hidden and all that sort of stuff and just walk in and put your phone on the thing and have it start charging. If you haven't got a mag mount, dude, the mag mounts are the business. Like being able to just stick your phone to your car is sweet. Mm-hmm. Those are the bomb. But then the charging was like an extra level of coolness for me.
Yeah, I did. I used one of those. I just forgot it. But it's the same thing. It's a magnet mount where I've got the little disc that's in the stuck to the back of my phone.
Yeah, I used to have one of those.
Yeah, I forget what it's called.
But now it's kind of nice because it's all built into the case and the magnets are in a certain sort of pattern and spot in a circle inside the case that you can't see and you can't feel them, obviously, but they're built for when you stick it to the magnet mount that you could still do the wireless charging. Anyway, they're great cases. They look really cool. They look sort of like carbon fiber, but they're not made of carbon fiber. They're made of a better material in terms of like grippiness and feel. So they look kind of nerdy too. It's nice.
Hmm. Very cool.
So my two picks, Elon and Pitaka. So you can go check out the Pitaka cases at ipitaka.com, ipitaka.com.
And we'll have those links in the show notes, obviously. Yep. So I've got two as well. One is interesting, one is funny. So one of them is an article by Wired, and the title is How a Dorm Room Minecraft Scam Brought Down the Internet. Now, the title isn't really that great, but... Remember when we had some of those massive
outages,
DDoS attacks that happened late in 2016? And then there was the one that, and we even covered it, the Dyn outage, DYN.
Yep.
This is the behind the scenes of the investigation of how they found out this happened. And there was the idea behind it, or what the motivation was. It was three guys that apparently there's a lot of money in hosting Minecraft servers. Didn't know this, but like $100,000 a month. And so these guys, what they did to try and keep other people going from other Minecraft servers is they created a dynamic or a DDoS attack that went after these other Minecraft servers, the competition, so they would come to yours instead.
Wow.
It's like corporate espionage kind of stuff, right?
That's crazy.
And it's three kids that came up with it, or kids. I mean, they're like 21 some odd years old. And what they had built was a thing called Miriat, M-I-R-A-I. And they recently were in a courtroom in Anchorage where they admitted to doing it, but they didn't realize how fast their bot network had taken over and it had gotten powerful. So like, I can't remember exactly what the number was, but there's something like when you normally have like a really powerful like a threshold for how many devices are in this bot attack. You get somewhere, I think it's around like the 50,000 number. And if you get over 100,000, that's when it's like a big deal. They got to 65,000 devices in the first 20 hours and it doubled in size every 76 minutes, where they ultimately got to a sustained strength of around 200 to 300,000 infections. And it got so bad that the likes of Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Cloudflare, all these big guys got together and they're like, this is epic. We got to figure out, we don't really know how to deal with this. And even Cloudflare said, hey, at one point, we've got to scale up all of our logging infrastructure because we can't keep track of what's going on. This is what we think happened, but it's just coming at us so fast, we don't know how to deal with it. So, so really, I'm most of the way through the article but it was like, it's a very long article and they've done a really good job kind of picking through to explain what happened. So,
no, that's cool. I'll have to read that. That looks interesting.
Definitely worth checking out. The other one is a link that I found on Reddit 2 days ago. The video apparently went viral and then there was a follow-up to it. And now that I'm actually seeing, from the time that I posted this to our show notes to the time that I'm actually looking at it, the thread has been effectively removed from Reddit, but you can still get to it and see the video, I think. So get this. Gotcha. So did you hear about Lucky the cockatiel who sings the iPhone ringtone?
No.
Okay, you need to see this. So basically this...
What have I been missing out on, AC?
Well, it's only been 2 or 3 days. So there's this cockatiel that gets pissed when its owners leave, and it can tell that you're about to leave because you start putting your shoes on.
Oh, yeah.
And the way it expresses its pissed is it comes over to you and it literally starts singing the default iPhone ringtone. Right? So there's this video of this guy trying to put his shoes on, and there's this bird that comes over and starts doing the ringtone and goes to like peck at the shoelaces as he's doing it. So that was the first video. And then a couple days later, another one shows up and the guy opens up his MacBook and he starts playing the video, and you see the bird in the background, and the bird's kind of walking by, and he hears himself singing the thing, and the bird kind of looks over at him, and he's got that plume that kind of comes up out off the feathers that come up off top of his head. He kind of looks over like he's getting pissed, and he walks over to the laptop and he's looking at it like, what's going on? And then he reaches down and he rips off the escape key off the laptop and looks at his owner, and the comments are going, they're going, there is no escape.
Wow.
It's awesome. He was.
Those birds are pretty clever. We used to have one in when we lived in Papua New Guinea, and they're pretty smart.
Oh, it's funny. You don't have to go find the original video, but you can watch the video of the link that I put in the show notes, and you can see him listening to it. And then go start reading through the comments. They're just like, the bird wanted to escape from the situation. Oh, there's no escape from this. Someone's like, oh, I came to drop a really good comment. It just...
I'm going to watch that. It's funny.
It's good.
Nice. Couple of good picks. Entertainment all around, really.
I think I try to, yeah. Try to. And useful stuff. Useful stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, so going forward, live shows, if anybody's listening to this, we would love to hear your thoughts on them. What time of the day we record this? Typically at 11 Eastern time.
11:30. Right?
11:30 Eastern, sorry, yeah. Or 8:30 Pacific in the US. We'd love to hear how that works for you. Ideas that you have, if you want particular questions answered or things you think we should include in the show, please get in touch with us and let us know. We would like to do this on a more scheduled basis so that you've got a sort of a heads up and we can send out, you know, notices about live shows coming up. And we'll try to make them regular as well, I think, in terms of so you know that they're coming up each month or whatever, however often we end up doing them. So, yeah, but I think the tech has worked out pretty well. You know, doing this with Zoom and publishing to Facebook seems to have worked all right.
Yeah, and if you want to be notified of these, I'll tell you, I mean, heads up, we're not going to do all of our shows like this. This is going to be like we'll do it a couple different times, but we'll try to make it a regular thing. But if you want to be notified of when we're going to do a live show, best way to do it is to get on our email list. Go to our site, microsoftcloudshow.com, sign up for the email list, and we'll send an email out saying, hey, we're doing a live show at this time. We would love to get your feedback on it. I know that, you know, only a handful of people tuned in to the live show today. Most of you are going to be hearing about this when you're hearing the recording showing up in your earbuds from your podcast app the week before the year is up. So definitely give us feedback on it, because we'd love to do this and love to keep doing more of these.
Yeah, and I think publishing through Facebook is probably the way we're going to go. So if, you know, go like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Microsoft Cloud Show. Go like us on that. We'll post about live shows and things on Facebook as well. And obviously you can get notified of when we go live on video and stuff like that. So keep it super easy. Hey, AC, thanks for a good wrap-up show for the year. Obviously it's been a big year for us. Been very pleased with how we've continued and gotten on with the show and things like that. So may let it continue in 2018.
Absolutely, man. 4 years running.
Yeah. And just as a heads up, we're going to do some predictions like we do every year in an upcoming show. So definitely stay tuned for that.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, CJ. Merry Christmas to you. Happy Hanukkah to everybody else that's out there, and to any other religion or whatever that I've missed that I'm not as familiar with. Hey, happy holidays. Enjoy your time with family and happy new year.
Absolutely. Have a good one. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.